Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is Advancing a Foundational Component of USDOT Smart Roadside Initiative, National Standards and Specifications for Weigh-in-Motion Technology. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you who are calling into the teleconference for the audio know that you do need to mute your computer speakers, or else you'll be hearing the audio over your computer as well. Today we'll have four presenters: Tom Carney of the Federal Highway Administration Office of Freight Management and Operations, Dan Middleton of the Texas Transportation Institute, Tina Butcher of NIST, Weights and Measures Division, and Will Schaefer, Director of Vehicle Programs for CVSA. Tom Carney joined the Federal Highway Administration in February 2000. After serving for 7 years as a statewide planner in the New York Division office, he joined the Office of Freight Management and Operations in May 2007 and currently serves as Freight Operations Program Manager. He also manages FHWA's truck parking program. Tom has helped deliver the National Highway Institute's training course entitled Highway Program Financing since 2001 and further supports NHI serving as a master instructor. Prior to joining FHWA, he worked 14 years at the New York State Department of Transportation, working in a variety of transportation planning-related work areas. Dan Middleton is the program manager of the System Monitoring Program at the Texas Transportation Institute. He is responsible for developing research programs related to the use of microprocessor-based systems and testing state-of-the-art sensors of various types for monitoring vehicular characteristics. The sensors include a variety of non-intrusive and intrusive technologies. Weigh-in-Motion represents a significant component of this research. TTI is providing technical support to the Federal Highway Administration on the current project, Integration of Weigh-in-Motion Technology into NIST Handbook 44. Tina Butcher joined the staff of the Office of Weights and Measures of the National Bureau of Standards, now NIST, in 1987. With the exception of developmental assignments in the Malcolm Baldrige National Quality Award Program and the NIST Director's Office, Tina has spent the bulk of her time at NIST working in the area of legal metrology device technology. She managed the National Type Evaluation Program from 1994 to 2000 and has served as group leader to the Legal Metrology Devices Group from 1994 to present. Tina has served as editor of NIST Handbook 44 and as technical advisor to the NCWM Specifications and Tolerances Committee, the NTETC Measuring Sector, and a variety of other task forces and committees such as the NCWM Liaison Committee, the NCWM Task Force on Safety, and the NCWM Task Force on Energy Allocation. Will Schaefer has worked for 12 years in commercial vehicle safety and environment regulatory policy at the federal and state levels, starting in engineering department for the American Trucking Associations, followed by a year with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and 7 years with the Truck Manufacturers Association, where he supported the TMA Brake Committee. In 2008, he joined engineering and management consulting firm New West Technologies before starting in December of 2010 with the Commercial Vehicle Safety Alliance. He is a 14-year member of the Society of Automotive Engineers. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes allocated for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, please type it into the chat area. Please say make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will not be answering the questions during the presentations, but I'll start off the Q&A session with the questions typed into the chat box. If we run out of time and are unable to address all questions, we'll attempt to get written responses from the presenters. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen, and the presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and a transcript. I'll notify all attendees once these materials are posted online. One final note, today's seminar is eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group, please have your name typed into the chat box. I've included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits after the seminar. I encourage everybody to also download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you filled it out. So we'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic, for those of you who just joined us, is Advancing a Foundational Component of USDOT's Smart Roadside Initiative, National Standards and Specifications for Weigh-in-Motion Technology. As a reminder, if you have any questions, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered in the last half hour of the seminar. Our first presenter will be Tom Carney of the Federal Highway Administration Office of Freight Management and Operations. Tom's just going to give a brief introduction, and there are no slides accompanying this presentation. So Tom, you can go ahead.
you, Jennifer. I appreciate it. I think we won the award for the longest title session in Talking Freight so far this year. And I know this topic is not a topic that a lot of the participants today, the folks that dialed in, bump into on a regular basis. So I thought it would be a really good session just to make our freight community partners aware that this very, very important initiative is underway. And I do appreciate the time that Dan Middleton, Tina Butcher, and Will Schaefer have taken from their busy schedules to share some information on the project with our stakeholders. Way in Motion is a key technology that Federal Highway is looking at, an integral part of virtual way station concepts, which scaffolds up to the Smart Roadside Initiative. Smart Roadside is a cooperative partnership between Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, with their interest, their regulatory statutory interest in regulating truck industry activities. Federal Highway Administration does have oversight responsibilities of weight limits that apply to trucks traveling on the interstate systems. So WIM is a key technology. It is included within the palette of technology tools within the Wireless Road Inspection Program being managed by Motor Carrier Safety Administration. It's an integral part of the virtual way station concept being supported by Federal Highway Administration. These separate initiatives, these separate activities come together under a program that's currently underway called Smart Roadside. Way in Motion was embraced in Europe in the 1990s into 2000 under the research framework project called COST 323. Since that time, since the standard for Way in Motion had been considered to be adopted, standard specification in Europe, our European partners are still working on that, to support enforcement's interest in the use of the tool to make informed decisions of pulling vehicles of interest out of the travel stream, providing minimal disruptions to travel and to the supply chain as we pull vehicles of interest that need closer inspections. With the growth in truck VMT over the past few years, even during the economic downturn, we saw increases in truck VMT. And as we are all keeping our fingers crossed, we are watching, we hope, economic recovery here in the United States. The truck VMT will be an indicator of that growth, of that recovery, and the growth in that travel can be very, very significant. To support our enforcement community's interests in regulating truck weight, Way in Motion technology is seen and embraced as a key technology. To complete the package for enforcement action, to develop standards and specifications for Way in Motion, to introduce them into the National Institute of Standards and Technologies series of guidebooks, in this case Handbook 44, which Tina will speak to in more detail. An effort is underway, supported by Federal Highway, right now, to explore the feasibility and develop code for consideration to modify the handbook and get Way in Motion standards and specifications provided in the handbook, so the officer before the judge has a good solid reason to tell the judge why he looked at a certain truck and not others. So on that note, I'd like to hand off to our first speaker, Dr. Dan Middleton of the Texas Transportation Institute is our principal investigator. Our contract is with Battelle, and Battelle has tapped into TTI, into Dan Middleton, to be the principal investigator to help run this project on a day-to-day basis. Dan, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Tom. If those of you on the line might be like I was, not very familiar with Handbook 44, I realize Tina's going to be talking about that, but one of the key thoughts that struck me as I got started into the project is the basic goal of Handbook 44 is encouraging uniformity in the design, testing, installation, and performance of devices like WIM, and subsequently encouraging acceptance by prosecution agencies regarding the validity of WIM technology's role supporting commercial motor vehicle weight enforcement. So as we got into the research part of this, or what I think of as the research part of it, we've lined out our work in the overview that's shown here. First of all, I'll talk about the motivation for the project, then I'll talk about some of the objectives, get into the technical approach briefly, talk about the working group that's already been established to, it's a the group of stakeholders that are helping us make the right decisions and giving us guidance. Talk briefly about the existing WIMS standards, then some next steps that are on the immediate horizon. First of all, on the motivation, Tom mentioned that we're seeing what we're projecting lots of trucks on the truck growth as time goes on, even accelerated growth in trucks. We're to balance that, we have limited enforcement resources to deal with the significant effort that has to be expended on even compliant carriers. What we found in the past is that we spent a fair amount of effort on carriers that are compliant. And numbers that I've seen recently are that on the weight side, the weighing trucks that are compliant, and probably less than 1% of those are actually in need of being weighed statically. So we need a tool that we can use, such as Weigh in Motion, and we've been doing this, but just say that Weigh in Motion is a tool that can be used to separate out those that are compliant and the weight aspects, those who may not be. Also, there's infrequent and inconsistent use of the technology that's available, including WIM, to support the enforcement activities. This leads to a compromised quality aspect, lack of trust or confidence with technology over time. Thirdly, there's a lack of coordination and shared technologies and data exchange between and within agencies, which includes enforcement, transportation, prosecution, and the regulatory agencies that adds to the enforcement cost. We'd like to see agencies working together and synergy in the use of the data. Next, we've seen ineffective penalties and prosecution procedures that actually tend to encourage rather than discourage overloading as a routine business practice among the industry. Finally, performance measures that are focused on activities, really citations issued based on citations issued rather than outcomes-based, such as reduction and overloading. So we want to get that right and use the right metrics to measure success. There's a growing consensus among commercial motor vehicle weight enforcement agencies at the state and federal levels that the increased use of and reliance on key technologies such as WIM can significantly improve commercial motor vehicle weight enforcement effectiveness and efficiency. Expanded use of WIM technology is being supported and advanced at the state level. Ongoing Federal Highway Administration FMCSA initiatives. Tom's already mentioned the Smart Roadside Initiative. Others like virtual weigh stations, wireless roadside inspections, I believe Tom already mentioned those, as well as C-Vision. Those are all the technology side of what we're in the midst of here. I'll just talk a little bit, very briefly, about the Smart Roadside Initiative. The vision there is to will be achieved through the application of interoperable technologies and information sharing between in-vehicle, on-the-road, and freight facility systems. So again, Weigh in Motion fits well and is a key component as we move forward with this activity. I mentioned already the objectives for the study. Sort of the key phrase that captures what we're trying to do with the project and involving the stakeholders is to develop a proposed amendment to the NIST Handbook 44 related to WIM technology. I might just emphasize here that we're not planning or proposing to use WIM for direct enforcement. It's a sorting tool or screening tool as it's been used in the past, but we think we can improve on what's already being done and what's being done fairly well in a lot of cases, but we feel like we can make some improvements. I might also mention, Tina will probably say this, but every state adopts the handbook in some form, although they don't adopt every update, which is done on an annual basis typically, they might wait for a couple of years before they adopt a new handbook. But at that point, it becomes a law in their state. So it's just, again, the key objective here. On the technical approach, we've carved out five tasks in the project that we're working on, and I'll go through each one of these briefly. The first three are basically complete. We developed a project work plan. Task two was to establish the working group, again, which we've already done, and the working group is established and in place. It's a group of stakeholders. Task three is to, the intent was to solicit stakeholder input. Involves the working group, the outreach plan, which is a deliverable that was submitted a few weeks back, and the kickoff meeting, which happened in late July, July 28th, the Dallas area. Moving forward, task four, which is forthcoming, is to develop a draft WIM scale code that will be disseminated and discussed, and has the content shown here. Of those bullet points, beginning with definition, applications, etc., we think the working group would probably be of most value in the user requirements portion of that. So those are the that's the draft WIM code. I'll might be able to talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. The scale code, though, is we'll start basically on what we already have. Would be based somewhat on stakeholder input. We want to get everybody's input and use the guidance that will be provided there. Do a state of the practice review, starting with the existing standards and specifications that will come not just from the U.S. but from elsewhere. As Tom mentioned, we have a great deal of interest from our overseas partners. We'll be listening to them as well as certainly not to forget expert guidance by the NIST staff. And then task five supporting documentation will be provided at the end of our project. Let me talk a little bit about the working group charter. We've already established the charter for the working group. That involves the member roles, who the members might be, the representation, and the roles and responsibilities of each. There's two categories of members that were established early on. There's participating members and observing members. Participating members have a different role. They can vote in all decisions, whereas observing members might be Federal Highway staff or non-U.S. participants in the working group. Today we have 39 members in this group, so it's a fairly large group. But again, only the participating members have voting privileges in the proceedings. We've established rules of order for voting and making decisions within the group, so it'll be orderly and move methodically, we think, as decisions need to be made. And finally, we've established a communication and information exchange in terms of how do we communicate best with this large group and make that efficient and timely for all those involved so that everybody can respond and have good exchange in that process. The representation on the working group is categorized in this slide, and I won't read all of these, but you can see that the major groups that should be involved in this process are actually involved here, and we've got again, 39 total members represented in this group. So you have state DOTs, law enforcement, prosecuting agencies, et cetera, et cetera. So we think we've got the right groups involved here to help us make this process move smoothly. I mentioned earlier that we will start by considering existing WIM standards. The one that most everybody on the line, if you're familiar with any of these, probably familiar with the first one, is ASTM standard E1318-09, the C09 designates the most recent year that it was updated. That's the standard specification for how we weigh in motion systems, user requirements, and test methods. We use that one as a basis. We won't copy portions of it. That's not what we will do, but we'll use it as background material, build on that, as well as some other documents that are listed here and ones that are not. We're aware of at least a European standard that will be made available soon that we'll consider as well. And finally, the next steps for the working group and for the overall project in general, proceedings from the kickoff meeting will be forwarded to this panel. We began drafting the proposed WIM scale code, again, based on some of the documents that I mentioned and soliciting input from the working group members as we go. In planning, conducting a second working group meeting, which will be upcoming within the next few weeks, in which we'll identify WIM system user requirements and discuss that as we go. And I'll just close with my contact information in case anyone needs it. And I understand that we'll have questions at the end.
All right. Well, thank you, Dan. As I mentioned about questions, if you do think of any questions for Dan, please type them into the chat box and send them to everyone, and we'll get to them at the end of the webinar. I'm now going to turn it over to Tina Butcher of the NIST Weights and Measures Division. So, Tina, you can go ahead.
Thank you, Jennifer. Good afternoon, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. Dan has talked with you about a document called NIST Handbook 44, and I've been asked to give you a little bit of an idea on how a code for weighing and motion systems might be developed for inclusion in that handbook. So in today's presentation, I'm going to touch on the objective, the overarching objective of the work group that Dan had mentioned in his presentation. And I'm going to start off by giving you a little bit of information about the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST as we're known. And then I'm going to give you some insight into NIST Handbook 44, its purpose, scope, how it's adopted, how it's organized, and then link that into how a code would be developed that might ultimately be included in Handbook 44. And then I'm going to finish up by explaining how we would ultimately propose adoption of a weighing and motion code into the Handbook 44 itself. So first of all, to give you an idea of the overarching objective we're looking at, the Federal Highway Administration has developed the work group that Dan mentioned to draft a new weighing and motion scale systems code that would be used to pre-select or screen commercial vehicles in highway weight enforcement applications. And because it's intended for possible inclusion into NIST Handbook 44, I've been asked to give you an overview of what that process might look like and to explain what the handbook itself is. First of all, let me start by telling you a little bit about NIST. We are a non-regulatory agency of the U.S. Department of Commerce. Now, you may have heard an agency called the National Bureau of Standards referred to, that or NBS. That was our name up till about 1988 when our responsibilities were expanded and we were renamed the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST. Our office, the Weights and Measures Division, has a legal responsibility to promote uniform standards of weights and measures within the U.S. to facilitate commerce because we are part of the Department of Commerce. Now, an interesting point is that the U.S. Constitution gives Congress the charge of fixing the standard of weights and measures, and that's another way of saying that we want standards that are used in commerce with regard to weighing or measuring to be the same no matter what state or location you're in. Congress has delegated that responsibility to the Secretary of Commerce, who in turn has delegated that responsibility to NIST, and NIST has charged our division, the Weights and Measures Division, with the task of trying to get uniform standards of weights and measures across the country. We are authorized to work in cooperation with states and the private sector through our NIST Organic Act, and that gives us the authority to work with these organizations to develop uniform laws, regulations, requirements, and test procedures. And one of the things that we do to promote that uniformity is to publish a document that is referred to as NIST Handbook 44. And presently, we publish that document on an annual basis. As far as Handbook 44 itself, some of you may be familiar with it, may not. It is a comprehensive set of requirements for weighing and measuring devices that are used both in commerce as well as law enforcement. The overarching goal of Handbook 44 is to try to eliminate from commercial use any weighing or measuring device that would give inaccurate results or that could be used to facilitate fraud so that the buyer doesn't receive what he or she pays for or the seller doesn't receive fair payment for their goods or services. We do publish the handbook in an effort to promote that uniformity in law and regulation, and it has a very long history. In fact, as a little bit of trivia, when we were known as NBS, one of the very first publications that NBS put out was called Miscellaneous Publication Number 1. And Miscellaneous Publication Number 1 was a precursor to NIST Handbook 44. It went through a few iterations with different handbook names until 1949, when it first appeared as NIST, as then NBS Handbook 44, and it was periodically updated after that time, but kept the name Handbook 44, which it still does today. With regard to what Handbook 44 covers, there is a scope outlined in what's called the General Code of the Handbook in Section GA1, and that tells you what Handbook 44 does and does not apply to. In general, it applies to any device that's used in commercial service. And by commercial, we mean if you have a weighing or measuring device that's used to buy or sell commodities like bread or apples, anything by a weight or measurement. It's also used for devices that are used to determine a charge for a service that's rendered based upon a weight or measure. For example, a taximeter based on distance traveled, and so on. It also applies to any accessory to a commercial device, such as a cash register, a printer, a scanner, a service station console at a gasoline station, and so on. And one particular point of interest to this community is it also applies to devices used in law enforcement. As an example, a wheel load weigher that's used in highway weight enforcement, axle load scales, single or multi-platform vehicle scales, and so on, that is used in law enforcement purposes, those are also covered in Handbook 44, so you'll see a direct link to the areas that Dan was referring to in his presentation. Handbook 44 requirements, because NIST is not a regulatory agency, the requirements that are in Handbook 44 are not federal requirements, and they have no force and effect of law until they're adopted into the law and regulation of a state or local jurisdiction or another federal agency. Handbook 44 requirements are based upon proposals developed through another organization called the National Conference on Weights and Measures, or NCWM. Now, the National Conference on Weights and Measures is a private nonprofit organization. It was actually established by NIST, or NBS at the time, back in about 1905. And the National Conference on Weights and Measures brings together regulatory officials who enforce weighing and measuring requirements, manufacturers of weighing and measuring equipment, companies and parties that use weighing and measuring equipment, and anybody else that might have an interest in developing standards that would apply to weighing and measuring equipment or packaged products. The National Conference was first established by NIST to try to get together those parties with the idea that if everyone could agree upon a single standard, it might encourage uniform adoption and implementation in individual states. The way that the National Conference on Weights and Measures works is that only regulatory officials can vote on proposals, with the idea being that those regulatory officials are the ones that would go back into their respective jurisdictions and adopt a particular handbook like Handbook 44. While regulatory officials are the only ones that can vote on the proposals, literally any member or any interested party can provide input and comment on any proposals that are put forward through the National Conference on Weights and Measures. And I'll return to that point here at the end of my presentation. As to how Handbook 44 becomes a regulatory document, most states, as Dan mentioned, adopt the document through reference in their weights and measures law. NIST publishes another handbook called Handbook 130, and that handbook is a template or a model of weights and measures laws and regulations. And many states will adopt Section 4 of that handbook as a tool by which they will reference Handbook 44. Dan also mentioned that some states will adopt an earlier version of Handbook 44. So although the current edition right now is 2011, many jurisdictions are following an earlier version. And that typically has to do with how they enact or adopt the handbook in their particular jurisdiction. Some states will incorporate the handbook into regulation through their administrative procedures process. That's not quite as frequent because it is a cumbersome process and can take a couple of years to do, but that happens as well, and sometimes we see a lag because of that. With regard to this community, some states also adopt the document by reference to their transportation law. So there are some highway weight enforcement agencies that have adopted the requirements in Handbook 44 as they apply to highway weight enforcement applications. The handbook has literally been adopted by all states, not necessarily the same version, but in some form, all states have adopted Handbook 44 for commercial weighing and measuring applications. And this was one of the things that I think attracted the Federal Highway Administration to perhaps using Handbook 44 as a starting point, because it is so widely used and disseminated, and it might be a good focal point for people to get a document and a regulation in place that would meet the needs of all the parties that are affected by it. Inside of Handbook 44, to give you an idea of how it's organized and how it works, there is an introduction section at the beginning, and the introduction section tells you a little bit about how tolerances are developed, how proposals are put forward for consideration. It will give you an overview of how the handbook is organized and how it's intended to be applied, and then contact information if you have any ideas on how you want to modify the handbook. The technical content in the document lies largely in the general code, which applies to all devices, regardless of whether it's a taxi meter, a gas pump, a vehicle scale, a highway weight enforcement scale. The general code applies to all weighing and measuring equipment that's covered within the scope of Handbook 44. The specific codes apply to individual classes or types of device. For example, there's a single code that applies to belt conveyor scales, a single code that applies to liquid measuring devices. At the end of the handbook, there are a number of appendices, which includes a section called Fundamental Considerations. That's where you can find things like the theory of the tolerances that are in Handbook 44, what kind of inspection equipment needs to be used to verify the accuracy of a weighing or measuring device, what kind of actions might be taken against a device that's found to be out of compliance, etc. In addition, there are some handy conversion tables in the back, which include information on how to convert, for example, from metric to the customary system, as well as a number of definitions for terminology that's used throughout Handbook 44 codes. If we're looking at the Weighing in Motion project, it's interesting to note how Handbook 44 is organized with regard to the individual codes. As I mentioned earlier, Section 1 includes a code called the General Code, which applies to all devices. Section 2 is the section that we will be particularly interested in for the weighing and motion work, is the Scales Code. And the weighing section includes the scales, general scales. It includes belt conveyor scales, in-motion scales such as automatic weighing systems and so on. And we're thinking that this might be the most logical section to target the weighing and motion code. The remaining sections apply to other device types, such as Section 3 applies to measuring devices, Section 4 capacity measures, and so on. But Section 2 is probably where we'll end up looking when it comes time to consider including a weighing and motion code. Within each code in the handbook, there are other sections that will be of interest to you as you see the handbook requirements developed. In Section A, any code that has a designation of an A in front of it refers to the application of that code. It will tell you, the application section will tell you what device types that code applies to, and also what devices it does not apply to. That'll tell you right up front whether or not the particular code that you're looking at applies to the device type that you're using. Any code designation that starts out with the letter S refers to a specification. The specification relates primarily to the design of the equipment, how it's put together, perhaps how the unit of measure is presented, whether or not there has to be a printer, other information about how the equipment has to operate. Now, the specification sections are directed primarily to the manufacturer of the device, but these sections are also important to the regulatory official who has to enforce them. They have to have an understanding of them to make sure that they're applying them correctly. And even the user may want to take a look at these sections because that will explain for a particular device and application whether or not the device is designed to meet the particular needs they have. The N section, or the notes section, applies to the official testing of devices. This would be where the requirements are laid out for how a device is to be tested for accuracy or any other performance-related testing that might occur during an official inspection. Two remaining sections that are seen within every code are the T section, or the tolerances. The tolerances section will fix the limits of allowable error. This is the section that tells you how accurate a device has to be in order to be considered acceptable. The UR section are the user requirements. So any code designation that starts out with the UR designation will apply to selection of the scale or measuring device, how it's installed, any caveats or restrictions on how the device is to be used and maintained. And these, as you might expect, are directed particularly to the owner or operator. But again, these are should be of interest to the inspector, because the inspector needs to make sure that the users are following these requirements. And then the device manufacturer also has to be aware of them, because they have to make sure the device design meets up with the final intended use applications. With regard to the Federal Highway Administration's weighing and motion work group, the weighing and motion code will be developed along the line that Dan mentioned. So the first starting point would be to develop a draft of a code as a starting point for everybody to look at. And as Dan mentioned, that's been done. It's been developed and distributed. And in keeping with the idea that we would like to see this ultimately end up as a Handbook 44 code, it largely follows the Handbook 44 format. The first task that the work group will face is to agree and define the scope of that new code. And if you recall, I mentioned the A section of the code, the application section. That's the part of the code that will define what will and will not be included within the proposed code. So that's going to be the first task that the work group needs to take on to make sure that the application has been defined correctly. And then following that, each of the remaining code sections that I mentioned, the specifications, notes, tolerances, and user requirements, will need to be developed. The overall approach that the work group intends to use is one that we typically use when a new code is being developed in Handbook 44, and that is to take a draft or straw man and refine it through an iterative process where we're getting input from people who would be affected by the code. As with other codes that have been developed, the idea is not to reinvent the wheel, but to build upon any current state of knowledge that exists in a particular community, in this case, the weighing and motion scale system standards. Dan mentioned ASTM 1318 is anticipated to be particularly useful as a starting point to the work group. And if we ultimately want to see the document end up in Handbook 44, it's desirable that we follow the Handbook 44 format and content requirements so that it will fit nicely into that document in the end. The iterative process would include getting input from stakeholders, discussing any issues that would arise from that input, making modifications to the draft, and then achieving consensus that the draft would reflect and support input that had been obtained. And that process may go on until the work group achieves a point where they feel like they have a consensus on a final draft code. Now, once the work group has finished developing that final draft code, then comes the part about trying to get it adopted into Handbook 44. Now, you recall earlier I mentioned the organization called the National Conference on Weights and Measures. The National Conference on Weights and Measures is an organization that is made up of weights and measures officials, manufacturers of weighing and measuring equipment, users, and so on. That organization has to be approached with the proposed code and asked whether or not it could be included in that handbook. There is an established process, and under that process, a proposal has to be supported by at least one regional weights and measures association, and if it is supported, then it can advance to the national level. At the national level, there is an organization called the Specifications and Tolerances Committee, and that committee reviews and makes recommendations to either continue to develop a proposal, retain it as informational, put it forward for a vote, or withdraw it. And that those decisions are made based upon input that's received through open hearings and in writing. So in addition to opportunities to provide input as the code is being developed through the work group, there would be additional opportunity to comment on any draft code that would be in consideration by the National Conference on Weights and Measures. As a point of information, we have already advanced an item to the S&T committee just to get it on their radar screen that the Weighing and Motion Work Group has been established and is continually working on a draft that they hope to ultimately bring back to the National Conference on Weights and Measures. So in summary, the agency that I work for, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, or NIST, publishes a handbook 44 to promote uniformity. It has been widely adopted for commercial weights and measures applications, and many highway weight enforcement agencies also adopt it. So it was seen as a good starting point for an effort undertaken by a Federal Highway Administration work group to develop a code for weighing and motion systems that are used in screening purposes in highway weight enforcement applications. The idea is that we would actively seek input from stakeholders in the weights and measures community, including officials, manufacturers, equipment users, and any others who have an interest in seeing this code furthered. And the final draft code would be submitted to the National Conference for consideration with additional opportunity for review and comment through that forum. And I'll wrap it up with that, and I understand we'll have some questions at the end, and I'd be glad to answer any that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Our final presentation will be given by Will Schaefer, Director of Vehicle Programs for CVSA. And Will, if you give me a second, I'll bring up your presentation and you can go ahead.
Very well. Thank you for the introduction. I want to give a perspective of our state members, many of whom are weigh in motion equipment users. Basically a little bit about why it's important for standardization to occur and why standardization in Handbook 44 would be a good outcome for weigh in motion. And I'll give what I want to do is first give a little background about who we are, and that'll help to illustrate why our perspective. I'm having difficulty advancing. I don't see the controls.
Huh. Okay, so you don't see the arrows at the bottom of the screen?
Hold on a second.
There you go. Okay.
It was just off the bottom of the screen. My apologies. As many of you know, in the U.S., our federal regulations in transportation are implemented and enforced by the states, and states have the flexibility to also regulate as needed. But there is therefore opportunity for inconsistency of inspections, enforcement from state to state. And our organization was formed in 1982 in an effort to bring uniformity between states of those regulations and the enforcement. So we bring in our organization brings in to its membership the state agencies who conduct commercial vehicle enforcement, as well as we have associate members who are both industry and other outside groups, academia, insurance, law firms, et cetera, engineering, et cetera, that you see on this list, who also contribute to the effort. But our principal members, our full members, are the state agencies that do commercial vehicle enforcement, and therefore, their perspective on weigh in motion comes from this. Our principal mission is to promote commercial vehicle safety and security. That said, our state enforcement members have a significant undertaking in the U.S. There is federal funding for commercial vehicle enforcement. It's also matched by state contributions. Our organization also includes membership from Canada and Mexico, but I'm speaking today principally on the U.S. experience from those agencies, from each state's agencies. But part of the challenge is we have 2.5 million roadway miles in the U.S., 700,000 or so motor carriers, perhaps a little bit less than that number, but nonetheless, it's a large number of motor carriers. We have 12,000 CVSA certified inspectors across the U.S. So, in order to cover those number of vehicles for the miles that are covered and the increasing vehicle miles traveled, we inspectors need tools to help them conduct their enforcement activities. Now there are, you'll note that in the lower right hand side there, you'll note that there are 33,000 fatalities in highways, and a little over 3,000 were involved in large trucks. That number is actually the lowest it's been since data has been recorded. That said, so fatalities in truck crashes have been coming down, but that said, the number of vehicles is going to continue to rise. Through 2008 here, we had approximately 9 million registered trucks, large trucks. I think this is vehicles 10,000 pounds GVW or more, but basically it means that the issue of enforcement will continue to be a increasing challenge. So with the vehicle miles traveled, we also can see that this illustrates the traffic flow, sort of current day traffic flow. Projections are that traffic is only going to increase, and things such as way in motion as a tool will be indispensable. And we need these tools at our disposal. Now, CVSA, as was mentioned, the Smart Roadside Initiative was mentioned earlier by Tom. We are actively engaged in supporting that, and it's a multi-year, multi-agency, and industry effort to develop and demonstrate some of these tools that enforcement can use. Way in motion is integral to the Smart Roadside Initiative. And so why is way in motion important? We can look at a little bit at a snapshot of, this is 2007 inspection data. These are the top 20 driver violations for the calendar year 2007. And size and weight violations in terms of volume of violations issued was second only to local laws, which would include such things as speeding. So it would make sense that speeding would be first, or you know, local law violations would be first, but the second most issued violation was size and weight. So the states are charged with enforcing the safety of vehicles, the public, and also the infrastructure, and the investment in that infrastructure. And it's not only, not to mention, the security aspect of our nation's highways and the element that adds to enforcement. Now, way in motion, when properly used and in a standardized manner, provides a very useful screening tool to commercial vehicle enforcement at the state level. So I have two state examples that I wanted to bring to the discussion. Just for example, Washington State has way in motion experience with in which they've have 12 way stations, 4 ports of entry, an internal port, 7 internal scales, all using way in motion. Their systems use way in motion as a screening tool, and that includes vehicles with equipped with transponders that can be read by a transponder reader, a unique vehicle identification, a license plate reader engages in that interaction. The motor carrier safety rating is checked. The vehicle crosses the weigh in motion system. Weights are compared to the manifest, and the vehicle safety rating, the motor carrier safety rating, and outlier vehicles can be directed to the weigh station for static weighing, and where static weight is used for the enforcement purpose. So it's a screening tool for enforcement, but it's and that makes it a very helpful tool in the arsenal of the in the toolbox of that of the state commercial vehicle enforcement. Just a couple of images of the systems in use. Washington's experience, the experience of Washington State is that 5% accuracy is suggests that of the weigh in motion systems suggests that it's not directly used for enforcement, but it is used for screening, and it helps to multiply the resources that the state can put into that enforcement. Just a note that in Washington State, the implementation was a joint effort by the Washington State Patrol and the Department of Transportation. The department, the Washington Department DOT, installs the weigh in motion equipment. The State Patrol is responsible for operating and maintaining and conducting enforcement. Wisconsin has a similar experience. Wisconsin Department of Transportation and the Wisconsin State Patrol worked together to establish the state's coordinated safety and weight enforcement program. The methods are similar. The equipment is similar to what was mentioned in Washington, but really the key element is that it's a it is a tool that can be used if, as long as it's both maintained and meets some standardization. Now, that helps to illustrate the need for standardization in overall in for weigh-in motion systems. Both Washington and Wisconsin have reported a positive experience with using these various technologies. They think it's a useful tool. One note that Wisconsin has noted makes is that maintenance of the equipment and the systems is crucial. So not only implementation and use, but also confirming that they are operating correctly down the road. So just a few conclusions. Our observation, CVSA sees a correlation between enforcement and safety performance of the motor carriers, and so the weigh in motion systems help us use that, help our members use those or conduct those inspections more efficiently. It helps enforcement target those motor carriers that need attention, those vehicles that need attention, and it enables more throughput of vehicles for enforcement purposes. And by achieving the safety improvements through enforcement, we see weigh in motion as a cost as cost effective for safety. And I believe we'll have some question and answer following this. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you, Will. We are now going